Mr. Adams.
May it please the court. Joshua Adams on behalf of the appellant Mario Nunez. At trial, the government's evidence merely showed the existence of a buyer-seller agreement as opposed to the charged conspiracy that Mr. Nunez was eventually convicted of. This court has told us in cases such as Villar and Johnson that there are several different factors that distinguish buyer-seller agreement as opposed to a conspiracy.
You know, before you start, I just want to make absolutely certain that other than the impact on the $100 special assessment, I want to be certain that you agree that resolution of the appeal will have no impact whatsoever on the prison time, because he's not challenging for the convictions and the sentences run concurrently.
Those run concurrent, Your Honor, but I believe that if the conspiracy conviction is vacated, that it would lower Mr. Nunez's sentence time. He was convicted to 85 months, which was towards the higher end of the guideline range, and it's possible that the district judge considered that conviction for count one at the time that she convicted Mr. Nunez. So I believe that at a resentencing in the district court, it's possible that Mr. Nunez could receive a lower sentence. Returning back to the...
What you argued in the brief was that this was a buyer-seller relationship rather than a conspiracy, because there was no evidence that Latine profited from his sales to Nunez, right?
Well, correct, Your Honor. There's no evidence that
But what is your support for the contention that the government has to prove profitability or even success in order to establish a conspiracy?
Well, it's one of the factors that distinguishes the conspiracy agreement as opposed to a buyer-seller relationship. Mr. Latine sold Mr. Nunez drugs. He sold them on several occasions, sometimes on credit, sometimes not. And when I talk about profiting, I mean that Mr. Nunez sold those drugs to further buyers down the road at a higher price. Mr. Latine never saw any increase in profits or any sort of, they didn't share in the profits of these sales. Mr. Nunez bought drugs at times for his own personal use and then also sold them down the line. Latine had no interest or did not really care what Nunez did with the drugs. He just wanted to get paid for whatever he sold to Mr. Nunez. So the fact that once Latine sold these drugs to Mr. Nunez, his hands were washed, so to speak. He really didn't care what happened as long as he got his money. And another factor that this court should consider is whether Mr. Nunez and Mr. Latine advised each other regarding new customers, law enforcement, detection, and tried to look out for other competitors. And here, there was just none of that was present. Mr. Nunez, on two different occasions, when he saw that Mr. Latine was stopped by the Carpentersville police, called his father and told him what was going on. And it's our contention that that's merely just self-preservation on Mr. Nunez's part. He doesn't want to get caught, and he's afraid that Mr. Latine would wind up giving up Nunez, which is actually exactly what happened. And Latine's testimony, it changed the trial. On direct examination, Latine said that he sold to Nunez on credit all the time, and then on cross-examination, he changed his story. He said that, well, sometimes he sold on credit, but not all the time. He said that he never fronted Mr. Nunez any drugs, and that's found in the transcripts on page 241 through 242. So based on these factors, that it's clear that Mr. Nunez and Mr. Latine merely had this buyer-seller relationship. Any such conspiracy has to be proved as a separate agreement in and apart from the buyer-seller agreement. And that's found in both Villar and in Johnson. The fact that Mr. Nunez purchased between 1 ounce and between 9 ounces of cocaine from Mr. Latine in various times over a course of a year and a half, in and of itself is not enough to show that there's a conspiracy. If anything, it just shows a buyer-seller relationship. Lastly, also, Your Honors, there are two instances where Mr. Nunez returns certain drugs, about 3.5 ounces, to Mr. Lateen because they're of poor quality, that Mr. Lateen is trying to pass off on Nunez, you know, poor quality drugs that either Nunez can't sell or can't use for his own personal use. And another element that distinguishes a conspiracy is this concept of a mutual trust between the two parties. And if anything, it shows that Nunez completely distrusts Lateen. He's trying to pass off poor quality on him. He's afraid that Lateen, as I said before, will rat him out to the police, so to speak, once he's caught, and that's the explanation for the phone calls between Mr. Nunez and his father on the March 1st date when he finds out that Mr. Lateen was stopped. If there are no further questions from the court, I will sit down and reserve the rest of my time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Adams. Mr. Boutros?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Andrew Boutros on behalf of the United States. The evidence was more than sufficient to support the jury's finding that the defendant was in a conspiracy with his cocaine supplier, as opposed to being in a buyer-seller relationship.
You know, help me with this. Is it the government's position that repeated transactions on credit essentially transform a relationship from buyer-seller to one of conspiracy? And if so, how many transactions, you know, are enough? Because I'm thinking about the Valar case. We had 2 to 3 transactions, but they totaled 2 kilograms in a 2-month period. And it doesn't matter here that it involved 2 kilograms over an 18-month period, so, you know, indicating smaller transactions, smaller risk.
Your Honor, indeed, U.S. v. Valar, as you indicated, did say that standardized sales on credit with payment to follow was sufficient, and then for purposes of establishing the conspiracy, and then in U.S. versus Speed, there was also routine practice of fronting and repayment payment, plus, in that case, an indication.
But why is it in this case there wouldn't be characteristic of many simple buyer-seller relations?
In this specific case, Your Honor, we have several additional plus factors. The plus factors that the court has identified in cases such as Cologne and Johnson. There certainly was mutual trust here. And this
what is that? Why is that a plus factor?
Or an additional
trust is extraordinarily common in buyer-seller relationships. Of course, sellers try to get their customers to trust them, right? And vice versa. The customer tries to get the seller to trust him that he's going to, you know, pay for the product and not return it and so on.
Your Honor, there was, in this case, the routine trust also extended to...
Who cares? I don't understand. So they trust each other. So what?
Well, I think taken in context and the totality of how this relationship...
Look, context, totality doesn't do anything for me. What is there in this case that would seem unusual in an ordinary commercial relationship, you know, in a legal industry?
I think, Your Honor, also the strong efforts to avoid detection, as was discussed in the brief, where...
Well, of course, if you're in an illegal industry, you're buying and selling illegal goods, you try to conceal. That would be true even if of drug dealings that you conceded were buyer-seller. Of course they'd conceal it.
But there was the concealment aspect, Your Honor, in addition to...
I don't see the addition. If you're selling an illegal product and you're buying an illegal product, you're going to try to conceal that transaction. Nothing to do with conspiracy.
But, Your Honor, here it was actually going that additional step of going back to the supplier's house, talking to his family, saying, give me the wood, i.e., give me the drugs so that I can get rid of it. And then afterwards, he went and told his father, I almost got it. I almost got the drugs from the house, and then subsequently he was doing counter surveillance as this stop was happening, updating his father, asking what he should do under those circumstances.
Wait, how does the father come? I don't understand that.
It used to be, Your Honor, the defendant and his father used to provide cocaine to Lateen. And that was early on in the 2008 and before time period. Subsequently, the father and the son, the defendant, had an argument and a fight, and so the father kicked him out of the house and no longer was in working with his son to sell the drugs. Afterwards, the father then became the wholesale supplier to Lateen, and then Lateen began selling drugs to the son, to the defendant. And so the father cut out the son, and Lateen became the son's supplier. Then, and this is as a result of the fallout. Subsequent to that, Your Honor, during this stop, the son then goes back to his father, with whom he had the fallout, and said, I'm paraphrasing, but Dad, they just stopped Lateen. What are we going to do? At that point, the father said, go to the house and see if you can get the drugs, because if they've stopped him and if he says anything, the police are likely to go back to the house, and we need to get rid of the drugs. At that point, the son, the defendant, in fact, went back to the home, tried to get the drugs. The family searched for it, could not find it, and eventually the son left empty-handed and then expressed regret that he didn't have the drugs. Then after,
okay, so you're saying that's conduct that would be atypical of a buyer. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor. And then
is there anything else in the case? I think that's a good point. But is there anything else in the case that would be atypical of a buyer, a mere buyer?
I think, Your Honor, the repeated nature of the transactions over an extended period of time here.
Well, but I mean, think about that. Repeated nature of the transactions. So if someone buys milk every week from a grocery store for many years, does that make the purchaser a conspirator with the grocery store?
Your Honor, if the weight of the milk was an entire, vat of milk every week, it would suggest that he's not, under normal circumstances, consuming all of that milk on his or her own, because the quantity
right,
that would
so he's a wholesaler. He buys huge quantities of milk. So what? That doesn't make him a conspirator.
But he also
purchase in bulk is not conspiracy.
But, Your Honor, here there was also additional communications where the distributor would go back to his supplier and say, my customers are complaining. You're putting me in a bad...
That must be the most common thing in the world in lawful businesses, right? You're a grocery store. You're selling milk. And the customer comes back to you and says, this milk is spoiled. So you go to your wholesaler and you say, look, you sold me this spoiled milk. I want my money back. That's not conspiracy. That's called distribution.
Only in the academic sense, but go ahead.
Your Honor, I think, Your Honor, this was not purely a binary buyer-seller scenario where you have the...
No, I think you have a good point about the father getting into the picture. I'm just wondering what else you have that isn't typical of buy and selling.
Your Honor, I don't want to go back to mutual trust because Your Honor wasn't weren't very keen on that, but we think, Your Honor, that...
I'm not keen either.
And Your Honor as well.
I'll join it.
I think, Your Honor...
Buyers and sellers often have a high level of mutual trust. That can be very important, like medical services, right? You want to trust your supplier.
But here, Your Honor, there was also the additional, when we say that the defendant himself perhaps also engaged, had his own customers. Here, with the fronting aspect of this relationship, where Lateen testified that he would wait until, he would front the cocaine and wait until the defendant obviously sold it to his customers to then give the defendant additional drugs, and that the quicker the defendant moved his drugs, the quicker that he would front him additional drugs. That sort of common practice and that standardized sale on credit, I think, Your Honor, shows that this is not just simply a buyer-seller relationship, but that these individuals. These co-conspirators enjoyed a common criminal objective.
Sales on credit are very common in lawful buyer-seller relations. So the selling in an illegal business on credit obviously does depend on either trust or, you know, threats or something. But isn't that just because it's an illegal buyer-seller relation rather than because it's a conspiracy?
But, Your Honor, again, going back to this criminal objective, you know, the court-authorized wiretaps picked up language after this stop that we referenced, where the defendant and his wholesale supplier are talking about, we have to be smooth. I believe those were the words of the defendant. You know, the defendant asked his wholesale supplier, the show going to continue or no? Your Honor, this is not just simply an arm's-length type of business of a buyer and seller where one person is going to...
Well, I think what you're saying is that because the buyer and seller are both criminals, they have to protect each other in a way that is atypical in the buyer-seller relationship.
Your Honor, you summed it up very well. And I see, Your Honor, that my time has expired. And unless there are additional questions, the government would ask respectfully that this court affirm the conviction and sentence of the defendant, Mario Nunez.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Boutros. And Mr. Adams, anything further?
Yeah, I'd like to respond to what the government said earlier regarding the fact that Mr. Nunez alerted his father once he saw that Mr. Latine had been stopped by the Carpentersville police. If anything, Mr. Nunez is looking out for his own self-preservation and his father's well-being to avoid detection.
Well, everyone's looking out for it. There's no element of altruism here. But isn't it true that with these illegal relations, illegal business, often the buyer and seller are protecting each other for their own sake, not out of altruism, in a way that wouldn't be common in legal businesses?
That's correct, Your Honor. However, as the government seemed to stated, that the fact that Mr. Nunez is going to Latine's house to remove these drugs is in effect to protect Mr. Latine. If anything, it's so that Mr. Nunez doesn't get coupled with Mr. Latine and eventually winds up being accused, which is exactly what happened, that Mr. Latine wound up saying, well, I sold everything to Mr. Nunez. So if anything, Mr. Nunez's forethought was correct, that he wanted to avoid his own implementation in this case. So it's not merely, this isn't evidence of conspiracy, it merely shows a buyer-seller relationship. I'll conclude by requesting that this court...
Okay. And you were appointed, were you not, Mr. Adams?
I was, Your Honor.
Pardon?
Yes, Judge.
Yes, well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client, and we thank Mr. Boutros as well. And our next case...